tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 10th of September, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. It's Thursday, which means it's Geopolitical Analysis Day, and we have a very special geopolitical analyst with us. We have Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from RussJournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
Yeah, well, it's wonderful to talk to another drummer, but it must be strange for you. People ask you, you know, how did you get into playing? And you say, I was in prison. I was in the prison band, which, you know, makes me smile every time you say it. Yeah, I think the prison system there is a little different than the prison system here.
Yeah, I was very lucky that they had that there. I mean, I played drums before, obviously. I played drums from about the age of 10, but I hadn't played for about 20 years. So it was just a pure stroke of luck, basically, that the prison I was at had electronic drums there, and I really got back into it in a big way. And yes, it's good to talk to you about these things and talk to you about these musical things. And last week you mentioned that we were going to do something to do with September the 11th today. It's actually September the 10th, but we have got a September the 11th, 9/11 theme to today. We're actually going to be talking about the heroin production and how the war on terror affected heroin production whilst NATO were controlling Afghanistan, and what the situation is now that the Taliban are back in control. And we're going to be using globalresearch.ca for our source, and it's actually written by Michael Chusadovsky. And the original of this article was written in 2005, and it was updated in 2025. And we also have an article that's just come out as well, which we're going to use right at the end. So bear in mind that this original one came out 20 years ago, but it's been revised. What is important to understand is that one of the key strategic objectives of the October 2001 war on Afghanistan was to restore the opium trade following the Taliban government's successful 2000 to 2001 drug eradication program, which led to a 94% collapse in opium production. This program was supported by the United Nations. In the course of many years following the US-NATO October 2001 invasion, there was a surge in Afghan opium production. In turn, the number of heroin addicts in the US increased dramatically. Is there a relationship? There were 189,000 heroin users in the US in 2001, before the US-NATO invasion of Afghanistan. By 2016, that number went up to 4.5 million. That's 2.5 million heroin addicts and 2 million casual users. So that's over 10 times as much. In 2001, the Taliban government, in collaboration with the United Nations, had imposed a successful ban on poppy cultivation. Opium production declined by more than 90% in 2001. In fact, the surge in opium cultivation production coincided with the onslaught of the US-led military operation and the downfall of the Taliban regime. From October through December 2001, farmers started to replant poppy on an extensive basis. The Vienna-based UN Office on Drugs and Crime, the UNODC, reveals that poppy cultivation in 2012 extended over an area of more than 154,000 hectares, an increase of 18% over 2011. A UNODC spokesperson confirmed in 2013 that opium production is heading towards record levels. In 2014, the Afghan opium cultivation hit a record high. According to the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime's 2014 Afghan Opium Survey, war is good for business. The Afghan opium economy feeds into a lucrative trade in narcotics and money laundering. According to the UNODC, opium production in Afghanistan rose by 43% to 4,800 metric tons in 2016, compared with 2015 levels. According to the latest Afghanistan opium survey figures released today by the Afghan Ministry of Counter-Narcotics and the UNODC, the area under opium poppy cultivation also increased to 201,000 hectares in 2016, a rise of 10% compared with 183,000 hectares in 2015. This represents a 20-fold increase in the areas under opium cultivation since the US invasion in October 2001. In 2016, opium production had increased by approximately 25 times in relation to its 2001 levels, from 185 tons in 2001 to 4,800 tons. In 2016. I mean, these are absolutely massive increases, far higher than they ever were even before the Taliban. And you have to wonder whether part of this is driven by demand, because also at this time, I think we also had the rise of synthetic opioids, legal synthetic opioids that were being sold by Sackler Pharmaceuticals. And I think when the people that were addicted to those, were dependent upon those, when their prescriptions were taken away, they then had to find an alternative substance. And of course, then they went to heroin. So I think that might have been one of the reasons why there was an increase in demand. But I mean, that's quite a phenomenal increase in supply. And I guess you could say, well, that was a side effect of the war on terror, because the Taliban just happened to be against opium, and this is just a side effect. We weren't expecting this, and of course the people that were responsible for this, they were the ones that were working with NATO, so sort of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So NATO's friends in Afghanistan turned out to be the poppy farmers and the people connected to them, and also the child abusers, which we won't go into now, but we have gone into in other episodes how they were also NATO's friends in Afghanistan. But today we're going to be talking about NATO's poppy farmers. Matt, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, a great resource, The Intercept, in 2021 just made a bold statement. They said for 20 years, America essentially ran a narco state in Afghanistan. And that's true. Now, I've also come across recently an article from the U.S. Institute of Peace, June 8th, 2023, by William Byrd. The title of it is "The Taliban's Successful Opium Ban is Bad for Afghans and the World." They're not even hiding it anymore. I agree with the author. That is one of the key strategic objectives here. But also keep in mind, yeah, it's true, the Taliban did use sometimes extreme measures. You know, put a gun to their head. You're not growing this anymore. You're going to grow something we could actually eat. Afghanistan became very food insecure, because only about 10% of the land is arable, and if a lot of it is going to opium, you know, where's this food coming from? But the profit margin in those two are not the same. Any alternative leadership that the U.S. wanted to put in power is definitely financed by opium. And it retards economic development. You know, if you have the opportunity for quick profits, that's where your money's going to go, rather than actual, real, useful investment. Your country's going to remain in fourth world status forever. Now, keep in mind, the country's been at war, God, since the 70s. Which is something that the U.S. didn't understand when they went in. And of course, yeah, this is very closely connected to 9/11. I remember at the time saying, what does Afghanistan have to do with any of this? It didn't make any sense. But there were other reasons for the invasion, of course, but Heroin was definitely one, but now they're coming out and saying, oh, by the way, that article has been removed. It says page not found. So they must have gotten a lot of heat for that. But I'm seeing other variations of that also from official government, early government-funded sources. In my book, The Foreign Policy of Mass Society, American Failures in the Islamic World, the cover is of American soldiers guarding a poppy field. And you could find like 10 million pictures of that. There's no question it was important. And but it creates this tiny oligarchy of drug dealers that the U.S. is doing business with. It drove me – I just want to talk about projection. It drove me insane when people talked about the heroin being a Taliban creation, they're profiting. You know, they sacrificed quite a bit to destroy the crop. The Taliban have generally speaking been popular, but they didn't just use, you know, violent methods. They did sometimes. With money from Pakistan, they did set up treatment centers as well. That was a second phase of their development. They won their drug war in 9 months, something like that. They actually treated it as a war. And the Taliban said, there's a fatwa. Of course, Islam is vehemently against that kind of thing. They said, we better stop this now before these drug lords start having their own armies, like they do in Mexico and Colombia. So the Taliban, this was very rational. They did not profit from heroin whatsoever. Neither does the government in Burma. And I think the increase in you, first of all, I don't think there's such a thing as a casual heroin user. I'd like to meet one. I think that's a very odd way to put it. You know, when you're planting poppy and you're investing in that, you're not investing in the real economy. And in addition, you're not investing in food. So the country who used to be able to feed themselves, even have a small export of wheat, now requires a huge number. I think it's something like 35 million tons imports every year to feed its population because of this. You know, it reminds me of North Korea. It's very mountainous. It's hard for this stuff to be enforced everywhere. It encourages local autonomies. But when you talk about the Taliban, you know, they did the right thing. When you have a country that is that destroyed with warfare over 3-4 generations, public morality collapses. Do you remember the videos of the Afghan National Army all strung out on heroin or marijuana, trying to do jumping jacks? That was hilarious. But that's pretty much what you had. The Taliban were the only group that remained free of that and had a very strong sense of purpose. You know, you had a domestic market for this stuff as well. In addition to all that, the U.S. was involved in the heroin trade because Afghanistan borders two countries, Iran and Russia. And a huge portion of, at least in certain years, of the Afghan crop went to those two countries with the specific purpose to destabilize it, destabilize them. Iran had a big problem with drug addiction. When you look at a map, you see why. You know, prices, you know, the production was so great that prices went down. Today, though, you know, heroin's being, or, you know, opium, morphine, whatever you want to, coming out of East Asia. East Asia is now the number one place to go. Mexico to a much lesser extent. But to hear the the U.S. Institute of Peace coming straight out and saying this is bad. And I know what he's arguing. He's arguing that farmers there are so dependent on opium, it's going to be a huge shock for them to actually grow something useful. But, you know, because there's sanctions on the country, because the U.S. refused to acknowledge the Taliban as a government, that gets more and more difficult to, you know, they could have outside support. The only really big supporter is Pakistan. They just signed a trade deal with Belarus and Uzbekistan. They don't have a lot of outside support. So they were really up against it, and yet they won anyway. And when you have a country that it's just one big ball of PTSD, and you need a firm, strong Islamic movement, centralized, that's going to get people into shape, you know, some kind of normality, some kind of rationality, before you can think of any other system. And that's why they're the heroes of Afghanistan, in my opinion.
Oh, you mentioned there about the soil and that the farmers are going to have to grow food crops. I think that's one of the problems, isn't it? I mean, as you said there, only 10% of the country can actually be used for growing anything. And the beauty of the poppy is that they can grow it anywhere. It doesn't need to have special soil. So the farmers that were growing poppies aren't actually able to grow anything else. And when they were given other crops that they were supposed to grow, these cash crops, they just didn't earn enough money with them that they can earn with the opium. And I remember seeing a few years back, somebody was nominated for the UN Peace Prize. Two people were nominated, and there was one person from Colombia, and they were being nominated for trying to do away with the cocaine trade by getting obtaining licenses to sell coca tea throughout the world instead of cocaine. And the other person was somebody that was in Afghanistan who was trying to arrange to have all the opium that was produced by these Afghan farmers, have it all purchased by the medical industry so that it could then be turned into medical opium, medical morphine rather, that can then be turned into various opiates that are needed for the medical system. And they turned it down, and they said, no, we're not buying this because it's an illegal crop. And in actual fact, most of the opioids that the medical system uses, they make it from coal tar. It's never actually been anywhere near a poppy. And later on, as we'll see here, that there's mention of this and how they try to say that this was all going as opium for medical uses, and that's why there's more. There hasn't actually been more heroin, and that's a nonsense because they were not able to sell it for medical uses. They were only able to sell it on the black market. This is one of the problems. And also another point that I wanted to bring up: when I was in prison, I met somebody that was in Afghanistan fighting for the army, and he was guarding the poppy fields. And he said when he came out of prison, and there were other when he came out of the army, and there were others that came out of the army, and they'd been taught how to kill people with their bare hands, basically. And they then were then hired as bodyguards and security for drug dealers in Britain. And it was exactly the same thing that they had been doing in Afghanistan, except they'd been doing it for the government, guarding these poppy growers. He said, and then people end up being put in prison, basically, for being a bodyguard for these drug dealers in Britain. But what's the actual difference in what they're doing? One of it is it was state sanctioned in Afghanistan, of course, and it's not state sanctioned when they're doing in Britain. Anyway, getting back to the article here. In response to the post-Taliban surge in opium production, the Bush administration has boosted its counter-terrorism activities while allocating substantial amounts of public money to the Drug Enforcement Administration's West Asia Initiative, dubbed Operation Containment. According to the 2012 Afghanistan Opium Survey, released in November of that year by the Ministry of Counter-Narcotics and the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, potential opium production in 2012 was of the order of 3,700 tonnes, a decline of 18% in relation to 2001, according to UNODC data. However, there is reason to believe that this figure of 3,700 tonnes is grossly underestimated. Moreover, it contradicts the UNOCD's own predictions of record harvests over an extended area of cultivation. While bad weather and damaged crops may have played a role, as suggested by the UNODC, based on historical trends, the potential production for an area of cultivation of 154,000 hectares should be well in excess of 6,000 tonnes. With 80,000 hectares in cultivation in 2003, production was already of the order of 3,600 tonnes. It is worth noting that UNODC has modified the concepts and figures on opium sales and heroin production, as outlined by the European Monitoring Centre for Drugs and Drug Addiction. A change in UN methodology in 2010 resulted in a sharp downwards revision of Afghan heroin production estimates for 2004 to 2011. UNODC used to estimate that the entire global opium crop was processed into heroin and provided global heroin production estimates on that basis. Before 2010, a global conversion rate of about 10 kilos of opium to 1 kilo of heroin was used to estimate world heroin production. For instance, the estimated 4,620 tons of opium harvested worldwide in 2005 was thought to make it possible to manufacture 427 tons of heroin. However, UNODC now estimates that a large proportion of the Afghan opium harvest is not processed into heroin or morphine, but remains available on the drug market as opium. EU Drug Markets Report, a strategic analysis, EMCDDA. That's January 2013. There is no evidence that a large percentage of opium production is no longer processed into heroin, as claimed by the UN. This revised UNODC methodology has served through outright manipulation of statistical concepts to artificially reduce the size of the global trade in heroin. And that's what I was referring to. They're saying, oh, it's available on the drug market as opium. Well, the medical market, the medicine market, don't actually use that. If they're going to actually create opioids from opium poppies, then they grow them in their own countries like Britain or America. But the vast majority of it is made from coal tar. So are they saying here that the vast majority of the opium goes on the market as opium? I don't think people ever see opium outside of Afghanistan, to be honest. I mean, are they saying that it's all just used in the domestic market in Afghanistan? Well, that's not plausible, is it? I know they do have a problem there. So it does look as if they are massaging the figures here. What do you make of it, Matt? Have you come to the same conclusion as me? Other evidence to base it on?
Oh, yeah. You know, that's all I've been doing this week is reading all of these. I've been doing this for so long with the drug issue over there. It's the clearest, most blatant form of the U.S. Being involved in this nasty trade. What happens here, as they've changed their statistics by saying that, well, only a certain portion is refined into heroin. The rest, maybe opium, maybe morphine. They're being dishonest. But that doesn't make it better. These are still highly addictive, destructive drugs, no matter what form it's in. So now they won't say that the Karzai regime oversaw so many tons of opiates. They'll say a much smaller number because it's just heroin, which I don't think is true anyway. But even if it were, what difference does that make? They're trying to make their own people sound a lot better, because this was something, it was so blatant. And it's great to hear that story about guarding the fields. Veterans of that war came back a little bit disillusioned, to say the least. First of all, they didn't know what they were doing there. And secondly, what they were doing there was awful. The manipulation of statistics is out. It shouldn't surprise you. And there is no question that anytime the Taliban was in power, like today, they're not going to use that method. They're going to make it seem like, if there's ever an example of projection, neurotic projection I've ever seen, it's claiming that the Taliban are growing, refining heroin, while in fact it's the U.S. that's doing it, to the point where we have an article that says it's bad if the drug war is won by a major government-funded publication. Now, there have been problems with water, just like the American Midwest. The water table has been going down, actually been going down by almost a meter a year recently. So agriculture, it might be in serious trouble there, but because you have sanctions, you know, the U.S. essentially stole its foreign reserves that were placed in foreign banks, like $9 billion. But then says, you know, and now the Taliban's in power. You know, they won't, you know, but when they had this fake drug interdiction, like you mentioned here, Operation Containment. Well, everybody in that government was making money on that. The whole thing was completely ridiculous. Any actual method that worked was rejected. And the most important one was from the air, destroying the crops from the air. And Karzai and his allies said, no, we can't do that because it might work. Or, you know, it'll anger farmers. So the only way he allowed it to be done is going from farm to farm, tearing up the crops by hand. In other words, the point is, make sure it doesn't work very well. So, this is you know, it's absolutely outrageous. And I agree with the author. This is a huge reason, not the only one, but an important one, why Afghanistan, of all places, was invaded in 2001. You know, I know you do too. I distinctly remember I was in Washington, D.C. at the time. I wrote the first 9/11 truth article that very day. But then I wasn't even thinking of the drug angle at the time. When I thought of heroin, I thought of East Asia. I thought of Vietnam and places like this. But just like in the U.S., just like anywhere else, eradication programs are window dressing and just window dressing. Absolutely. You know, because there's no way to avoid, if you're setting up a pro-U.S. government, well, you have to deal with drug dealers. And the exact same thing happened in Albania. You know, the only economy in the world based entirely on heroin and trafficking. I remember seeing that statue in Kosovo of Bill Clinton that they put up, and I wrote on Facebook, when I had a Facebook, I said, this is amazing. The first statue of any public figure made entirely out of used heroin needles. And you know what? I don't think I'm all that wrong. I was being funny. But, you know, this was such a diversion of needed funds and labor. And, you know, the food crops, yeah, there's a big difference in profitability. But it's not so big as to be impossible. It is going to be a shock. There's absolutely no doubt. And thanks to the American invasion, Afghanistan's economy developed in such a way that it's highly dependent on opium.
Well, I was just going to say the idea that they wouldn't be refining it into heroin when the substance is illegal is just ridiculous, because clearly they're going to have to smuggle it out, and the way to smuggle it, they're going to want to smuggle it at the purest, smallest substance possible. So they're going to refine it because it's less likely to be caught that way, because it's going to be in a small space, whereas the opium is going to be bulky, it's going to be smelly. It's there's no sense to it whatsoever that they would just be selling illegal opium rather than refining it into heroin. And that's another point, that reason why this idea is so ridiculous. Sorry for interrupting you there, Matt. Please continue.
No. That's a very good point. I hadn't thought of that. I've taken pain pills for a very bad root canal. That's as close as I've come to heroin. It's the same. Product, I suppose, is in a very different form. But, you know, I know the UN stated that opium poppy cultivation, you know, the processing, the transport, security, all that stuff, was Afghanistan's top employer, the main source of capital, the base of its economy. You know, I think he said, this was Antonio Costa, I've quoted him a few times before, well, the U.S. was there. You had, what, 3 million Afghans from 28 to 34 who were involved. I'm sorry, Afghans from 28 out of 34 provinces were involved in one sort or another with opium, the cultivation in some way or another. Something like 15% of the population. But even though you have this boost of profits from it, a tiny percentage of that $3 billion they estimate goes from opium profits actually goes to these impoverished. They're the farmers. They're impoverished either way. The traffickers take the massive amount of the profit. So the whole profitability issue, even that is iffy. But no one denies that it's going to be a shock to the economy to switch from poppies to actually useful crops that people want. Now, the U.S. has sanctions on the country. They really don't know what's going on, but, you know, they can't, and they've stolen their foreign reserves. They've made it extremely difficult for Afghanistan to rebuild. And, you know, that's what the Taliban are up against. And besides that, they don't actually have to run the country. I mean, drugs aren't the only issue they face. The development of the country will be severely hindered, severely, so long as drug dealers remain breathing. Drugs extract, yeah.
I was just going to say, this, you know, the solution to this problem would be if the medical industry would actually buy the raw product, opium, buy the whole lot, the whole harvest, and then refine it themselves and use it in opioid medicine rather than making it from coal tar, because surely it's got to cost them to be synthesizing it from coal tar in the first place. And all these other synthetic versions that they have of it, fentanyl and all the rest of it, it's got to be, you know, an expensive chemical process to make it. Surely if they were to just purchase it from, as in like the whole harvest, legitimately from Afghanistan, the Afghan farmers would get some money, Afghanistan would get some money, and it would divert all of it to the medical market. But they say, oh, we won't deal with drug dealers. So well, you're left with a problem.
I've looked into this, and the actual medical use, because it's so tightly controlled, a very small portion of land is needed. And if they do whatever they take from poppies rather than coal tar, they're taking from Mexico, possibly East Asia, but definitely Mexico. You know, we're talking about the U.S., you know, the EU. I think it comes from there. So because of the Taliban ban, you know, market has shifted to these countries. So, but the amount of land and labor that's required to fill that order from, you know, the different companies who are making pain medication, which, by the way, is legitimate medication. They're hardly even prescribing it anymore, is very small by comparison to the heroin market. So, yeah, there may be something to that, but, you know, they'd end up with this massive glut of opium on their hands. The point is, drugs extract so many rents from the rest of society. They keep investment funds, investment money from coalescing. I mean, quick profits are always preferable to the dedication of long-term planning. And in a society that's been so battered, that's how it's been. That's why the Taliban are absolutely necessary to force this through. I mean, they go up to a farmer, they put a gun to his head, and they say, you're not going to do this anymore. And he says, okay, I guess. They beheaded a couple of people. You were warned once. That's how you win a drug war. But everyone who's beheaded, God knows how many lives are saved out there because they're, you know, they're not being produced. And we need the food.
Getting back to the article here. opium production declined by more than 90% in 2001. That's under the Taliban. In fact, the surge in opium cultivation production coincided with the onslaught of the US-led military operation and the downfall of the Taliban regime. From October through December 2001, farmers started to replant poppy on an extensive basis. The success of Afghanistan's 2000 drug eradication program under the Taliban had even been acknowledged at the October 2001 session of the UN General Assembly, which took place barely a few days after the beginning of the 2001 bombing raids. No other UNODC member country was able to implement a comparable program. And we have a quote here about it. Turning first to drug control, I had expected to concentrate my remarks on the implications of the Taliban's ban on opium poppy cultivation in areas under their control. We now have the results of our annual ground survey of poppy cultivation in Afghanistan. This year's production, 2001, is around 185 tons. This is down from the 3,300 tons last year in 2000, a decrease of over 94%. Compared to the record harvest of 4,700 tons 2 years ago, the decrease is well over 97%. Any decrease in illicit cultivation is welcomed, especially in cases like this when no displacement locally or in other countries took place to weaken the achievement. In the wake of the 2001 US bombing of Afghanistan, the British government of Tony Blair was entrusted by the G8 group of leading industrial nations to carry out a drug eradication program, which would in theory allow Afghan farmers to switch out of poppy cultivation into alternative crops. The British were working out of Kabul in close liaison with the USDEA's Operation Containment. The UK-sponsored crop eradication program is an obvious smokescreen. Since October 2001, opium poppy cultivation has skyrocketed. The presence of occupation forces in Afghanistan did not result in the eradication of poppy cultivation. Quite the opposite, the Taliban prohibition had indeed caused the beginning of a heroin shortage in Europe by the end of 2001, as acknowledged by the UNODC. And I think another side of this, when there was a shortage of heroin in Europe, and I guess in America as well, I think that may have been when fentanyl got a hold, and the suppliers started shipping fentanyl rather than heroin, and then you ended up with lots and lots of overdoses and people being addicted to oxycodone and all sorts of synthetic opioids in America. And since then, I mean, that's been available on the black market, whereas before this shortage, I don't think it was there. So the actual shortage of the heroin being available actually meant that a more dangerous version then entered the market, a more dangerous synthetic version. You know, there were pros and cons to everything, Matt. Do you want to say something on this?
Well, when the Taliban eradicated the poppy crop, by the way, they were given, the UN was fawning over them. Today, you know, because of all the propaganda, they can't do that. And by the way, the link to that speech is now also gone. Also, you know, page not found. But when that was done, the market did two things. Yes, you're correct. There was a trend towards the synthetics, as dangerous as they are, but also a geographical shift. As I've mentioned, they've gone elsewhere. East Asia, Mexico, any other place where they can grow it. So, it eventually stabilized, and the fentanyl, as you mentioned, it has a lot of advantages. It's you need so little of it that you talk about easy to transport. You know, you could put it anywhere. It's so small. And I know, you know, the there's so many extreme versions of fentanyl that are used for zoology, you know, to put an elephant to sleep. So there was a legitimate market for that. When I was in the hospital, actually, I was on a small, tiny dose of fentanyl for a short time. I didn't even know. But that market is very small. But yeah, pros and cons to everything. You know, you know, goes to show you, even if drugs were legalized, the drug dealers aren't going to say, okay, I guess we're done. We're going away. No, they're going to create something better. They're going to create something purer than what the government allows now. They're going to create, so this happened in Holland. We're going to create something, we're going to treat it differently. They're not just going to go away. But Tony Blair being entrusted with this is makes me smile. Probably made you smile too. Operation Containment was an absolute joke. Wherever the Western world tries to eradicate drugs, they don't do it. The Chinese did it. I've gotten into trouble, the Filipinos under Duterte. I know I have friends who say that I'm wrong on that. And now here, Afghanistan, and also in El Salvador, these things can be won. You have to actually have the will to do it and have a government that's actually on, wants to do it rather than profiting from it.
Well, I was just going to say, I think making the things illegal is what caused this huge market in the first place. If you think about it, opium was legal at the height of the British Empire, and the British Empire used to sell it all around the world. They used to purchase it from Afghanistan, purchase it from India, swap it for silks and other goods, and then it would be for sale in Britain. It didn't cause any problem in Britain. You had opium dens. People used to smoke opium. They used to take laudanum, which was morphine in alcohol, I think, or opium in alcohol, and it didn't cause the end of the world. The British had the British Empire, and then it got sold in China, and the Chinese had a serious problem with addiction, and caused the opium wars. And it was only after that there was really a problem with it. And in the 1920s, I think coca and heroin, both of them were legal. You could purchase them at Harrods, and it was a thing that the aristocracy used to do. It wasn't something the lower classes were interested in. And then when they made it all illegal, there's now this massive business, a billion-dollar business that's been created with addicts that end up having to thieve to pay for their habits, prostitute themselves, end up in a terrible physical state. And there's these drug barons that are just making all these profits or something that used to be a part of the pharmaceutical industry. It's a bit of a philosophical issue, but I do think we went the wrong way with this war on drugs and making them illegal. And I also find it very interesting, as I say, that at the height of the British Empire, it was all completely legal, because we talk about, they were selling opium to the Chinese, but there wasn't a problem with selling opium to the British. It was only once it was sold to the Chinese that they ended up having a problem with it. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
At least Britain was consistent. It wasn't like it was illegal in Britain and then they sent it to China. Samuel Taylor Coleridge wrote some of his best stuff on it. Kublai Khan, in fact, he wrote while on opium. I disagree a little bit with that. As I just mentioned, drug dealers aren't, if it's legalized tomorrow, the drug barons aren't going away. They're going to create something else. And do something better or sell it cheaper, more cheaply. Here in Pennsylvania, it's fairly expensive in the legal marijuana market. And you have to buy a car, it's like $200,
The genie's out of the bottle now, basically. You can't go back to how it was. I mean, that's the problem, I think.
The Chinese may have shown the world what might happen. And, of course, something like cocaine, the powdered cocaine is way too expensive for anyone but, Rod Stewart at Studio 54 to use. That's where crack came in. They're always going to adjust somehow. And crack was brought in as a cheaper and far more potent alternative to the powder.
And of course, crack cocaine was far, far more addictive than normal cocaine, and it was rife amongst the black communities. In fact, there was a conspiracy theory that it was deliberately introduced to the black communities in order to help destroy the black communities. But again, that's another topic. Heroin is a multi-billion-dollar business supported by powerful interests, which requires a steady and secure commodity flow. One of the hidden objectives of the war was precisely to restore the CIA-sponsored drug trade to its historical levels and exert direct control over the drug routes. Immediately following the October 2001 invasion, opium markets were restored. Opium prices spiraled. By early 2002, the opium price was almost 10 times higher than in 2000. Afghanistan produces over 70% of the global supply of heroin, and heroin represents a sizable fraction of the global narcotics market, estimated by the UN to be of the order of $400 to $500 billion. There are no reliable estimates on the distribution of the global narcotics trade between the main categories: cocaine, opium, heroin, cannabis, stimulants, and others such as hallucinogens. The proceeds of the drug trade are deposited in the banking system. Drug money is laundered in the numerous offshore banking havens in Switzerland, Luxembourg, the British Channel Islands, the Cayman Islands, and some 50 other locations around the globe. It is here that the criminal syndicates involved in the drug trade and the representatives of the world's largest commercial banks interact. Dirty money is deposited in these offshore havens, which are controlled by the major Western commercial banks. The latter have a vested interest in maintaining and sustaining the drug trade. Once the money has been laundered, it can be recycled into bona fide investments, not only in real estate, hotels, etc., but also in other areas such as the services economy and manufacturing. Dirty and covert money is also funneled into various financial instruments, including the trade in derivatives, primary commodities, stocks, and government bonds. And I did hear that with the bankers crash in 2008, that was effectively was also bailed out by all the drugs money, all the illicit money. I'm not quite sure on the backstory of that. Had you heard about that one, Matt?
Well, yeah, I think you initially heard it from me, because we've spoken about that many times. And that comes straight from the UN, from the very same organization. In fact, it comes from Costa's own work. That's what saved the American stock market. They're not worried about a shock to Afghan farmers. They're worried about a shock to Wall Street. Whenever there's a problem, whenever there's, you know, people pulling their money out of the stock, drugs are there. I my wife and I are watching the Narcos series, and we're on the Mexico one, and they bring it up there too. You guys are nothing. You guys couldn't function without us. He's talking to, you know, Western bankers. You guys are stabilized because of us. And that's why one of the big reasons nothing ever happens, maybe it's the big reason nothing ever happens. There is no, you know, I've always said there's no war on drug. Because a war doesn't give every enemy soldier a lawyer, you know, and due process. I don't remember, you know, Iwo Jima, I don't remember any Japanese Marines having a lawyer there and debating all this stuff. They were shot, you know. And when you have politicians who are clearly benefiting from it, but most of all, you have corporate America benefiting from it. I think it's common knowledge that the massive amounts of money that are laundered through the U.S. stock markets and elsewhere, means that if they were to be destroyed tomorrow, you would have tremendous economic instability in the U.S., showing just how rotten and evil the system really is.
Well, when people are on drugs, whether they're just recreational users or otherwise, a large amount of their money after they've paid for food and paid for their rent is going to go into the drug economy. I mean, you could say some people could be a third of their money. With people that are addicts, it could be pretty much 100% of their money that goes into the drug trade. It's got to have a massive effect on the economy. The total area, and this article, by the way, is from this year. This is looking back at 2025, what Afghanistan has been like since the Taliban took control again. The total area under opium poppy cultivation in 2025 was estimated at 10,200 hectares, 20% lower than in 2024, and a fraction of the pre-Taliban levels recorded in 2022, when an estimated 232,000 hectares were cultivated nationwide. In 2025, it was just 12,000 hectares. Accordingly, opium production has also declined in 2025 at a rate even greater than that of cultivation, dropping by 32% compared to 2024 to an estimated total of 296 tons. Farmers' income from opium sales fell by 48% from $260 million in 2024 to $134 million in 2025. After the ban, many farmers shifted to growing cereals and other crops. Worsening weather conditions, such as droughts or low rainfall, however, resulted in over 40% of farmland laying barren. I would point out that the farmland is going to be barren anyway. It's very, very difficult for them to grow anything over in Afghanistan. That's why they started growing the poppies anyway. Matt, what are your final thoughts on all of this today?
Well, again, the idea that the Taliban profited from heroin is one of the most blatant cases of projection I've ever come across. Yeah, the country will briefly suffer as a result of the eradication because farmers will be forced to switch to less profitable crops, things you can actually eat. As farmers in Afghanistan were once heavily reliant on wheat farming long before this era to make a sufficient income, when it came to poppies, it gave them, certain farmers anyway, a boost in capital. But the fact is, you know, most of that money doesn't go to farmers. It goes to those goes to their bosses. Now, I think in 2025, the total area under poppy cultivation remaining is about 10,000 hectares, which is, you know, which is nothing. As you say, any remaining production, though, is, you know, because that's how Afghanistan is. It's so mountainous and difficult. Any remaining production is found in the north, where the pro-U.S. forces, remember the Northern Alliance, have some remnants. Again, the Taliban were finally victorious, defeated the U.S., drove the U.S. out. Yet again, they won their drug war for the second time. There were some clashes with the Taliban from certain farmers. Certainly the drug lords weren't going to take this laying down, but many of them ended up laying down permanently. See, once it was clear that the U.S. was losing, you know, say 2022, something like that, this gave them enough time to switch. The writing was on the wall at this point. The Taliban were quite ready to work with the United Nations, anyone else, to make the switch easier. I think cumin is a big substitute in certain regions. And the UN, and by the way, those who are wondering if this, how true this is, you know, the UN is not exactly a fan of the Taliban, but they use satellite images, and they do have some agents on the ground. Yeah, it's not 100%, but there is some heroin growing in the very, very, very remote areas that the Taliban hasn't, you know, very hard to get to. I have the 2023 poppy cultivation in southern Afghanistan. That report, almost immediately, when the Taliban took over, there was an 80% drop because these farmers knew what was going to happen. The UN says in November of 2023, 95% the drop in poppy cultivation. You know, and my final thoughts, here are the implications. The U.S. government is heavily involved in the drug trade. Heroin was at least a part of the reason for the initial invasion of 2001. Using 9/11 as a cover. A drug war can be won, and it can be won quickly. Drugs can be used as a weapon of war. And again, any claim of Taliban heroin is pure projection. No one denies this is going to be a difficult shift, but it's not like they weren't growing this stuff before. The only ally Taliban have seems to be Pakistan, but they're also signing trade deals with a few other powers they're observer. They have an observer status with the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which is a very good thing. Oh, and by the way, the source that I had for Afghan heroin going deliberately to Iran to weaken them in Russia comes from the 2026 interview with Chris Hedges, the CIA whistleblower John Kiriakou. He said he was told by DEA official that Afghans were allowed to cultivate poppy by the U.S. for export to Russia and Iran, just for that reason. Almost all of Afghanistan's heroin production went to Russia and Iran for this purpose. So, it is, like I said, it is a weapon of war, and that's what I meant by that. So well, the implications of this are extraordinary.
Well, if they wanted to eradicate it, I mean, they'd just simply work with the Taliban, wouldn't they? They would buy the crop off them, give them help to give the farmers other things to grow, even though they would have difficulty doing it. And the fact they haven't done that and they demonize the Taliban, I mean, it just shows you that there are other things going on there. And I definitely think it's should be given some serious thought about this being grown in order to corrupt Russia and Iran with it. And to flood them with cheap Class A drugs and weaken their opponents. I mean, that's what it's about in geopolitics, weakening your opponents. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.